AM 1400, 93.3 FM K1, and our Capital Call this morning on 1400 brought to you by Phillips 66. And we have legislators in the studio, starting off with Chairman Sears. And the Lieutenant Governor had some good things to say about you when I talked to him on Wednesday morning.
Oh, the Lieutenant Governor, he's a class act. He's a good friend of mine. He's just and doing a phenomenal job, by the way. And I'm not ready to... He'll run for governor, but we'll talk about that another day.
Yeah.
Anyway, good man, and doing a great job for Oklahoma. Hey, welcome everybody, and thank you for tuning into our radio show. And we won't forget it, but I just want to say thank you to Phillips 66, who sponsors this show. Very, very busy week. Everything's out of committee, and now then just all week long we were on the floor. We'd go in about 9, 9:30, and we'd adjourn anywhere from 4:30 to 5:30 each day. Yesterday, though, we got out a little early. I think we got out about 3:30 yesterday. But some silly bills came through, but there was some great legislation in the two I want to talk about, and I'm sure Representative Dunlap may want to add something to it. We did pass the teacher pay raise, something that we're extremely proud of on the House side.
92-7.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Democrats continue to hound in regards to where you're going to get the money. Well,
it's a legitimate question to ask.
Pardon me?
It's a legitimate question to ask. Yeah.
No problem with that. But after you ask it about the 80th time.
I hear you.
And you get the 80th answer that we don't have it. We can't tell you today, but that's what we plan on doing. So anyway, I was very, very pleased with that. No question, I think possibly if we had more, we could probably come up with a bigger plan in regards to more money. But right now, it's $1,000, then $2,000 next year, and then $3,000 the third year. And I think it's a well thought out plan. But again, it's on its way to the Senate. I know they're supportive, but again, there may be some changes to it. But the point is, we stood united on that and passed that. And the other one was the wind credits. I want to brag, come in, and pat the back of Representative Dunlap. He has joined the journey with me in regards to tax credits. I'm extremely proud of him.
Vote on that.
However, I was proud of him before this anyway, but he introduced a bill, and I had a bill, and there's several coming from the Senate, but right now, quote, leadership has cut a deal, and what's on the table that we voted upon this year is that July 1, 2017, we will do away with the zero admission. Now, you need to know we're still obligated to a huge amount of money because of the wind farms that are before this deadline. But we'll deal with that.
AP is reporting $40 million this year and average $60 million a year for the next 15 years.
That's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate. Now, the point I'm making is that Representative Dunlap and I, and quite frankly, I'll let Senator Daniels make her comments because she's a champion as well in regards to wanting to roll back these credits. But again, I'll let them both make their own comments. But the point is, the delegation here in Bartlesville, I'm extremely proud of because it's really too expensive. We need to make some modification, and I wanted more, but the bottom line to it is we're out of the zero admission.
And I'll pick up from there.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Sears, and thank you for having us, Charlie.
Always happy.
Yes, I'll make a go ahead and comment on the zero emission tax credit. I'm very pleased that the House dealt with that this week. Not only have we taken on a big issue and done something about it, but we've done it early in the session so that we've sent a clear signal to all involved that this is a priority of the House, that we are working on issues throughout the session, and even though we've always worked on issues throughout the session, we're actually putting them up for votes early in the session, and I really appreciate the House leadership for doing that. So I will talk a little bit. The tax credit will end on July 1st of this year, which coincides with our budget year. We did pass the bill with an emergency on it. What that means is that we can put the law into effect more quickly than the Constitution would otherwise require, which is 60 days after governor's signature. That can typically be August 1st, which would put us behind in the fiscal year and you know, make all sorts of problems. But also, we usually put on enacting clauses into our bills, which is typically November 1st. And so all of those are just cleaned up by the fact that we got the emergency passed just barely. Emergencies require 66 votes. We got the emergency passed, and it will be in effect pending the Senate and the governor's action on July 1st, which is wonderful. We did not do anything with capping the payouts of the credits that are already eligible to be claimed. The bill that I introduced put in a cap to do that. Leadership was concerned about going forward if that would be challenged by the industry. There's no doubt it would be challenged, but we do have a precedent for doing this, because in last year's budget, we capped the payout on the marginal wells tax credit. We also retroactively took away the double deduction, which many of the listeners took advantage of in previous tax years. This year, when they filed their taxes, they realized that we took that double deduction away, and it probably hit a lot of the listeners to in the hundreds of dollars. And so we retroactively applied that. We also retroactively applied the elimination of the earned income tax credit. And so we have some precedent in terms of capping payouts of what has already been promised. So I was hopeful that that would be part of the discussion in the deal that was cut. That wasn't part of the discussion. But I was happy to support what was in front of me on, when was that? Was that Wednesday? It was windy Wednesday. And we dealt with that. Ironically, I think the wind at the Capitol was incredibly high that day. So we can't you know, go on our day without acknowledging a few ironies like that. So we are very, very pleased to deal with that. And I think we've done a great thing ending that on July 1st of this year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Daniels, good morning.
Well, thank you. Sorry I'm a bit late. Rogers State University had its scholarship breakfast this morning. Great turnout. As of this morning, they had raised $15,000 for scholarships for students attending RSU, and we honored a young woman from Dewey who's a freshman receiving a scholarship, and then several others in the room. Always an inspirational event. I want to continue on this conversation about tax credits. In the Senate, we had two pieces of legislation that had to do with notice to property owners and people with oil and gas interests, anything going on in an area where somebody wants to construct a wind farm. And also cleaning up a, let's call it a loophole, where if you didn't want a wind farm around you, and I don't blame anybody who would prefer not to have one, you could go in and build an airstrip, whether or not you were actually going to use it, and declare it an airport, and wind farms can't be within a certain distance. I mean, so on our side, we did a piece of legislation that amended that notice and amended that carve out for people who put in airstrips to avoid having wind farms. And then we will switch and we will get the bill that the House voted on. I agree with Representative Sears and Representative Dunlap. I don't think it goes far enough. Both our leaderships basically said to us, this is the deal. And at least it gets us out of the zero emission tax credit business as of July 1. You know, the argument is, if you even do this, do you discourage business from coming to Oklahoma? Will they all pull out? Will other industries pull out? And this is where this business, this job we're in, is a judgment call. You weigh that against the huge obligation we've put on the taxpayers of Oklahoma, where we're literally paying out to an industry that is now very well established and probably doesn't need this help. But do you buy into this idea that if you renege on this this commitment to this industry, do you poison the well with everything else you're doing in Oklahoma? I don't buy that argument, but some do, and I think it's a way to sell a deal that doesn't go as far as the three of us would like. Now, we have some folks in the Senate, Senator Quinn from Claremore, particularly passionate about this, who are willing to continue that discussion about caps. So it's not that it's completely gone away, but I don't know enough, and Representative Sears could probably speak to this, what sort of procedures you'd have to go through to be able to bring that back into the discussion. But it is still alive, at least as a discussion topic.
Sounds as though it's similar to, but on a much smaller scale, of what the Congress is dealing with on the health care law now, as far as once you give something to someone, it's rough to take it away.
Correct. And just before I turn the microphone over again, what's going on in the Senate, not only are we meeting now many, many hours on the floor, but we didn't even take a break Wednesday. We went right into a Republican caucus meeting to talk about the budget. And they gave us this big sheet of paper that I couldn't read, but thankfully I already had it from Representative Sears and I have it posted on my wall. 67 different off-the-top apportionments we make in Oklahoma that go directly to a variety of places never touched by the legislature. Some of those apportionments come to the legislature into that general revenue fund. And if we are going to, in this very difficult budget time, look seriously about how we allocate money in this state, we have to start looking at these. And so we as a Republican caucus have been charged with looking seriously at how we can make some changes in the apportionments, and we began that process this last week.
Okay. Chairman Sears.
Yeah, and let me just add to that, and I've got to brag on Senator Daniels. Senator Ford and I, it's no secret, we met every morning at 6 o'clock. The only difference is the senator and I meet at 7 o'clock, but at least we're meeting. It's been quite fun in regards to exchanging ideas and what's going on in our chambers and just talking about legislation. It's just a neat time. But adding to what she just said, I need our listeners to know that where we are with the budgeting process is simply this. What the senator just told you what they're doing over in the Senate, basically we're getting ready to start that over in the House. No one really wants to talk about raising taxes until we've absolutely reviewed all of off-the-top credits, apportionments, additional budget cuts, programs, consolidation. And we've started that process as of yesterday or possibly late Wednesday. I know the Senate started it early. You just heard the senator say they had a meeting that just simply talked about those apportionments. Quite frankly, it's about $1.5 billion, but that money just straight off the top. I just wanted to give that little update on the budget. You're not hearing a lot. We talked about, for the radio show started, the teacher pay raise. Mm-hmm. I think before you started, you said that's a legitimate question. Well, it is in regards to how we're going to pay for it.
But I agree. Once you've asked the question 80 times, let's move on.
Right, right. But the point is, there's numerous issues out there in regards to what we're looking at, how to just pay for all kinds of things. Additional increase. There is no question we're going to need additional funds in the health care authority. The ad valorem reimbursement, paying the bond indebtedness on the capital. I can't tell you today that money's going to come from X, but in the very near future, we will do that. And by all means, we'll be able to tell you that before the end of session. I mean, probably around May. But the point I'm simply making, I wanted our listeners to know, that's how we're approaching the budget. Look at all of these avenues, all these pools of monies, before we even go into a deep conversation about raising taxes. Trust me, there's a conversation every day about taxes and raising taxes, but I'm talking about serious negotiations and conversations. Is this the one we really want to do, and do we need to do it?
Okay. So before you hand it over, you were talking in the hallway just a little bit about the bill from Representative Downing. Parts of the basically. At least there is a belief that the voters didn't understand when they were reducing the level of simple drug possession to a misdemeanor. And we had it during the week before the election from people like Sheriff Silver that, you know, if it's a misdemeanor, you can have it at a school. You can have it at a school 100 times. It doesn't matter. It's still a misdemeanor.
Right. Charlie, a great question. You could take this particular issue 14 different directions. I personally knew full understanding of what I was voting on. They have commented, the authors of these bills, that people didn't know what they were voting on. I've had people tell me they didn't, and then I've had people personally call me. I've had three constituents just call me yesterday and tell me how offensive it is that we keep saying that because they knew about it. So make that comment about that. But quite frankly, what I couldn't get past, is I think anybody listening to me knows that I had a great, phenomenal career in public education. We don't want drugs around schools. No one wants that. But on the same token, all this bill did was came back in and made, if you did have drugs or selling drugs in a school zone or 1,000 feet of school, it went back to the felony. And the whole point was, we're trying, that was what that bill was, move away from felony and go to the misdemeanor. So as far as I'm concerned, the people have spoken, and so I did not support that position. I voted to no on that particular bill. I think the people, they voted, they spoke. Now, split hairs all day long. I haven't even taken a poll. You know, of the 1.7 million people voted, or the 800,000 people that voted on that issue, I haven't done a poll.
Right.
Was 50% new, 50% didn't? I didn't. I just went with the, trusted the people.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
I'll add a comment or two on that issue, but first I want to go back and very briefly mention the way in which we're fixing the tax credit problem that we've created. We have already passed a bill this year that in the future we will not pass a tax credit that does not have a sunset date. Now, the zero emission tax credit did have a sunset date. We didn't expect it to grow that quickly. So the sunset date before we dealt with it was 2021. Mm-hmm. But that going to say, I feel like we are very aware right now of the need to have very strict sunset dates on our tax credits. There are a lot of tax credits that do not have sunset dates, and they're continuing on without consistent review, although we do have a process in place now to review them all. So just wanted to say that we're learning, hopefully, from our mistakes, historical mistakes, and just as we don't raid pension funds anymore, and just as we have our roads and bridges on an 8-year plan, we've learned from those mistakes in the past. Now we've learned from this mistake, which is we will not be careless with tax credits in the future. Of course, if I have anything to say about it, future, who knows? I can't control the future. But
As of today, you do have something to say, so go ahead.
There we go. And on this issue regarding the drug-free school zones and whether or not voters knew what they were voting on, I, like Representative Sears, don't doubt the wisdom of the voters. I don't have any reason to question that they didn't know. I think what has been commented on was the confusion that went into how the language would appear on the ballot. That all happened before the election, there were two very, and this is just fairly, I think, a very, fairly objective statement, there were two very different versions of the language that would appear on the ballot, and one particular version won out over the other. And the other that didn't win out had mentioned drug-free school zones.
It was more explicit.
Thank you, and I'll appeal to the objectivity of our of our journalist here. And so I think the discussion isn't on whether or not voters were ignorant or voters didn't know. I think the discussion was on the confusion that went into what language would appear on the ballot before the election took place. And so that there's that answer. I don't know if that helps listeners or not.
Have any time left?
Since our Brew and Buzz program guest is not available this morning, you can take what you need.
I just wanted to know if I needed to talk fast enough to get it in 30 seconds.
No. There's no one
so continuing
in the
on the 780-781. Now, I ended up voting against those two state questions because enough issues were raised in my head that I wasn't sure that the questions did exactly what they were intended to do without causing more problems. But we did pass them, and at the heart of it for me, we do not want to continue to over-incarcerate, over-criminalize behavior to the detriment of somebody's entire future if their offense is at a level where, or motivated by a substance abuse issue or a mental health issue. What can we do to make sure that we aren't creating criminals out of behavior that wasn't intended to be so? That's not a very good way of saying it. But so it's not to put more people in cells in county jails. The idea is to get the money that you would save to those who administer substance abuse and mental health programs. So I have voted on a bill to make sure that money now doesn't go to the counties, but goes to the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, where you have the right people with the contracts who can appropriately minister to those people who are elected on those new misdemeanors. Maybe they can use electronic monitoring, if necessary, to add to a substance abuse mental health program. Anything to reduce the costs and improve the outcomes. So to me, this is not state questions intended to build onto county jails. The idea is for people to not be incarcerated if you can absolutely avoid it and put them on a path to never interacting with law enforcement on these issues again. So that's where I'm headed with the implementation of these bills. And just as a side note, thanks to my son Fletcher, I went to a forum on Wednesday night sponsored by the Koch Institute that was all about the over-criminalization of state statutes. We're the fourth worst offender mm-hmm. in all the states, which surprised me because we have such a high freedom rating from the Cato Institute. But we have 1,200 penal statutes, and in civil law, we penalize a lot of things. So there's a lot to be looked at here, and 780-781 may just be the tip of the iceberg in these kinds of reform in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Charlie, we've got to get to the forum.
Wow,
thank you for giving us extra time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for coming in. And
anyway, all of you, thank you for tuning in to our show, and let's say it together. Thank you, Phillip 66.
It's 2:37 p.m. Sarah needs a bit of a break, so she stopped by her local Phillip 66 station, where she could take a rest and get her best friend Muffy a bowl of water. And while Jim came to fuel up his car, he realized he needed some fuel himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, we'll be here, fueling the neighborhood with performance gas and just about everything else. Phillips 66, proud to be here.